Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more. Talking sports, yes we do. Talking sports,
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. We got a lot to talk about. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and it is TGIF, and we are here for you on a Sports Friday. Not a football Friday, it's an everything Friday, baseball, everything. Let's talk about it. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, shoot us your emails. We're getting some AL and NLCS predictions, Ray. Ray and Tate today at gmail.com. Tweet at us, Facebook us. Also, check out rayandtatetoday.com. Some great baseball interviews. We've had Bob Brenly, Paul LaDuca, Al Troutwig talking about MLB with us. So give those a listen on our website. Ray, before we get to the baseball playoffs and how those series ended and our thoughts and preview for the AL and NLCS. Got some breaking news that a lot of Cleveland Brown teammates don't even know about. Johnny Manziel, not charged with anything, but seemed to be arrested driving over 90 miles per hour, drinking and having, I guess, a domestic dispute with his longtime girlfriend, argument. I don't know what to say because Johnny went to rehab. He thought he was on the up and up. Maybe he's upset or depressed because he's not playing. There might be some frustration there. McCown's been killing it, but this cannot be good for the organization. I don't know what's going to wind up happening, but Cleveland Browns fans and specifically the Cleveland Brown organization cannot be too happy today with one Jonathan Pigskin. What are your thoughts?
Disappointment. I mean, it's very simple. This kid has a chance. He's a first rounder. People in the organization still like him. He has a chance still to be an NFL quarterback. And I would argue that talent-wise, even though he's diminutive in stature, a la Russell Wilson, he still can play. But you know what? Nobody is going to take a chance on him. The more these things happen, you know, and because he's diminutive, right? If he was 6'5", 250 with a cannon of an arm, they might give him a third or a fourth chance. But you know what? He's not a cat with nine lives. He's a cat with two lives, maybe. So I'm thinking that his future in the NFL looks bleaker and bleaker by the minute. And I was a big Manziel fan, and I thought that he would be able to produce on the football field. But I don't think he'll even get a chance if he keeps doing this, to even get on the field.
Yeah, Ray, all I can say is Johnny be good. You know, Johnny be good. I hope it all works out for Johnny.
And this
before
is
we get
during
to the, MLB,
the season, too. But check this out. It's during the season. This isn't in June. This is in October.
Listen. What about your boy Derek Coleman for the Seahawks, who was, I guess, suspended or released, I can't remember, from the fullback. He was involved in some sort of incident off the field, too, just the other day. So, you know, I mean, guys, you can't believe that during the season or whatever, whenever it happens, that it happens, that you wouldn't be on the up and up and that you couldn't just either wait to act a fool if you have to act a fool, but you shouldn't act a fool. You got such a short career, especially in football. So, but when it happens, it shows you that there's a dysfunction that is very intense in their lives that they can't hide it, and it spills out, you know. So it is what it is. But before we get to the baseball, Ray, did you see our boy, I don't like this, LeBron James getting some injections in the back? Remember, he took off about 2 weeks last season having back issues and a lot of aches and pains. He's going to miss the last two or three, I think two preseason games. you think this is a big issue or just no big deal, LeBron James, King James will be fine?
No, I think it's a big issue because LeBron James puts a lot of wear and tear and a lot of miles on that body. And when you start getting injections and, you know, who knows what else these players do to keep themselves right, he's going to hit the wall at some point, right? He's physically not going to be able to do what he did when he was 25, you know, when he's 31, 32, 33. So soon enough, I think LeBron's going to hit the wall physically. Now, he's going to get smarter and smarter. He's maybe the most intelligent player out there. But, yeah, this is worrisome.
Yeah, I think what this tells me and what's kind of unfortunate, right, they haven't signed Tristan Thompson yet. Reports that the Cavs are pulling that five-year, $80 million deal off the table. But it tells me he's going to need more help. And Thompson's not there. JR is mental or whatever. Shumpert's hurt. And then he's relying on Love and Kyrie, who are both coming off of injuries, to sort of pick it up a little bit. So that means more pressure on LeBron. You know, you got Richard Jefferson in there now to back up at the three, maybe give him a little bit of a breather. But it's just it's not encouraging for a championship run, to say the least, especially when the East is better and the West is just too much posse, as Ray would say. So let's go to it, man. I mean, we've got in the AL tonight, the Royals and the Blue Jays. We'll talk about those games, how they got there. And then tomorrow night, Cubs against the Mets. This is exciting. Four fantastic teams, organizations. It's exciting for everybody. The big controversy, we have to put our two cents in on it. Did you have any issue with Joey Bats after that crazy seventh inning hitting the snot out of the ball from Dyson, the pitch, and doing his little bat aerobics or gymnastics flip as he did his home run, run or whatever? Did you have any issue with that? Was he showboating?
He was, but I didn't have an issue with it. You know, and I think baseball needs to come off their high horse. You know, I don't think he did it. And like he said, I honestly believe him. He's an emotional guy. And I think he flipped his bat because he was excited. It's like a touchdown dance in the end zone. It's like a celebration in hockey. But in baseball, you're supposed to hit a home run, which may send you to the World Series eventually. I mean, first it sends you to the LCS, but it sends you on to the next round probably. It's in the seventh, so it's not guaranteed. And you're supposed to just put your head down and run the bases. Don't run too fast because then you're showing me up. And don't run too slow because then you're showing me up. And don't flip the bat. Now, granted, it was some showboating, but you know what? I don't think it was showboating to disrespect anybody. I think it was just he was so happy. He'd never been to the playoffs. He'd never been, obviously, to the LCS. And he hit the biggest hit of his life. So
yes, that's, you said it right there, Ray. The biggest hit of his life. These guys are human. It's okay. Listen, baseball has got to stop. I know about how they police the game. We know about traditions. And he's like, oh, you know, you do that, it's a bad thing for the kids and role models. Well, wait a minute. It's a bad thing for the kids to see you, like an idiot, one, try to throw at a batter, and then also try to attack Edwin Encarnacion when he's telling the fans to chill out because they had been throwing so much stuff on the field after that bad call in the top of the inning, and where the Rangers scored that run off of that ridiculous, you know, play when they're throwing it back to the pitcher and hits the hand, whatever. Ray, he's in the wrong too, trying to be holier than thou, and he looks like a freaking clown. He's pissed because he just got drilled and knocked out of the park, and for us to think that players cannot emote at all, he didn't do anything pointing fingers at the guy. He just was happy and flipped his bat. I have absolutely no problem with it. Baseball players need to stop being so freaking sensitive and grow up. That's ridiculous.
100% agreed. I'm going to throw something at you right now. I just did this off the top of my head, but I think I got the numbers right.
Okay.
Whoever wins this World Series, it's going to be a long time coming. So you work backwards. The Blue Jays' last victory was in 93. The Mets' last victory was in 86. The year before that, the Kansas City Royals won in 85. And then the Chicago Cubs in 1908. So you could have a team with 107 years' wait, And the shortest wait would be the Blue Jays at 22 years since the last championship, 22 years since their last playoff appearance too. So somebody in some city, one of these four cities, is going to be not only so happy, but so relieved because it's been a long time coming.
That's so great and so true, Ray. And I think that's what is going to make this Final Four so fascinating. I want to give props to the Royals. We said it on our last show that, look, Houston, they should have got them in the game four. They had their foot on their necks. You let them, you know, you have this big lead, you relinquish it, and that was it. Like, I felt like they had momentum and they lost it. They even had a lead in game five, lost that. You know, the Astros, we tip their hats to them, great season, but it will teach them the lesson that when you have a championship or a very strong team down and you have a chance to end a series, you have got to finish them and you have got to end it. So kudos to the Royals for coming back. And how about Johnny Cueto, Ray? He got there and he struggled a bit. And this is why they brought him in to be the big game pitcher that he was. He was lights out after the first, you know, couple of runs he gave up. That was amazing, that pitching performance.
You know, it's funny because you could argue that during the season, he lost himself money, and now he made a lot of that money back in his postseason performance. So,
and one game.
Yeah, and good for Johnny Cueto. And you could say the same when we get to the National League about Daniel Murphy as a free agent. But, yeah, in the American League, you're right. That's what a young team probably doesn't understand. When you're down, you got to do, and especially in a five-game series, when you have a chance, you need, and the Dodgers are going to be saying the same thing because they had Jacob DeGrom on the ropes and didn't deliver the knockout blow. But when you have a team down, especially in a five-game series, you have to do everything and anything it takes to win that game because, you know, the tide can turn. And think about this Kansas City Royal team coming down from four down, three or four down a couple of times in this series. I mean, this is amazing. This team is really – and remember the beginning of the year, everybody, they were walking around with a chip on their shoulder. They were getting in all these fights, and they were all feisty and everything. But you know what? Maybe that brought them together even more. And maybe these guys are even more ready to take on the world.
They know who they are, and they know they're nobody's fluke, and they wanted their respect. And all the pundits, including Ray and Tay, didn't really recognize that they were Jigga the Genius and that they were here to stay. Not that we thought it was a one-year fluke, but we just weren't sure if they were, you know, ready to maintain it and be legit. And you know what? They know who they are. And
by the way, is that a compliment that we're pundits?
Yes,
it is. You throwing us a compliment? You throwing us a bone
right
there?
Ray, we are definitely
self-anointed
official.
Self-anointed pundits?
Yes. We are definitely official. Legit. Listen, we have SportsCenter following us on Twitter, so we're pretty legit. You know, we grew up watching SportsCenter, and they follow Ray and Tay today. So for you kids out there that don't know, you better act like you know. Ray and Tay today are legit. So before we get to the NL, let's just finish the AL. Let's clean it up and move forward. It's the Blue Jays and it's the Royals, and it's going to be fun and amazing. What are your thoughts? Is this something where it could be either team could pull off a miracle four-game sweep, or do you see this going six or seven games? How do you see this series?
You know, I'm worried about the pitching. The pitching on both sides has been kind of inconsistent, saved by some big-time hitting. So to me, Earl Weaver? You're as good as your next day starting pitcher.
Yeah,
and to some degree, that's true, but these guys are also getting some late inning hits. So the team that pitches better and the team whose starters, you know, show up consistently, getting them to the sixth or seventh inning wins. And I think that's going to be the Blue Jays. I think David Price has to turn it around. I think he'll get you one good game. I think you'll get some good pitching performance from Stroman the young kid. Maybe R.A. Dickey surprises with his, you know, his knuckleball is so unpredictable. So,
and what's the pitching tonight? Who's the matchup?
So tonight, here, let me pull this up. I pull up the matchup for the whole series.
I think they could go with Price first game one, no?
No, but he pitched, though. Let me see.
And a short stint relief in game four.
All right. So we've got – no, we've got Estrada. Estrada
Okay.
and Volquez tonight.
Okay, and Price will probably go game two.
And then game two, yeah, exactly. Game two is Price Ventura on Saturday afternoon. And then game three, let's see if the announced starters – yeah, the announced starters are Cueto and Stroman. That's probably the best pitching matchup of the series right there.
And that's going to be back in Toronto.
Yeah, and then game four is going to be Tuesday, and that'll be Medlin against Dickey. So they're each going to go with four starters.
And that's traditional for a seven-game series. You know, most teams like to go to that fourth starter so their aces, you know, can come back for, you know, five and six, which could be for a closeout. I got to tell you, at the end of the day, I think Joey Batts, maybe Donaldson will wake up. Edwin Encarnacion is – you know, second best batting average behind our boy Curtis Granderson right now, hitting well over 350 in the playoffs. So, you know, we're going to see which lineup can manufacture or dominate. What's fascinating, though, is that with Morales, the Royals can now hit that long ball. And, you know, Hauser and sometimes Moustakas, they go for it too. But with Big Daddy Kane, Lorenzo Kane, they manufacture runs, and I think that could be troublesome for the Blue Jays. At the end of the day, I got to believe the Blue Jays just have a little bit more talent, but the Royals have more heart and savvy. It's going to go seven games for me. It's a toss-up. My heart says I want the Blue Jays to win, but my mind says it's going to be the Royals. I predicted the Blue Jays from the jump, so I'm going to stick with the Blue Jays. I wouldn't be surprised if the Royals advance to the series just because they have so much heart, Ray. It's ridiculous. So it'll be fun. I'll stick with Blue Jays in seven.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I'm going to stick with the Blue Jays as well. I'm going to say Blue Jays in six. I think that they may be in five. I actually think that Toronto's bats are going to heat up. And like I said, I think between Stroman, Dickey, Price is going to come back. Estrada, I like this team to pitch better in this round.
Should be fascinating. Now, let's talk to the NL. I mean, look, what the Cubs did to the Cardinals, it was poetry. It was beautiful. It made you understand Chicago sports and Chicago sports fans. And the celebration, I'm not from Chicago. I've been there to see you, been there other times. It made you want to be a Cub fan for a night. That's how exciting it was. Jake Arrieta and you see Rizzo and what Theo Epstein has done and Joe Maddon, the guru manager of the year should be. You know, this team and Chris Bryant, they're special. The Cubs are special. The story was special. And they were just a juggernaut that the great, you know, Cardinals, who are the, you know, the top of the
win
top.
Cardinals.
100 win Cardinals, top of the top, they could not handle it. They could not handle the bum rush, the show from the Cubs. So props to them. That was, you know, beautiful to watch. And tell me honestly, did you think the way Greinke was looking that the Mets could even score anything on him? I mean, obviously they got that early lead, but once the Dodgers took the lead, did you feel like, oh my goodness, the Mets will not do it because Greinke, when you watch him pitch, him and Kershaw, it looks like a different type of human being pitching. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's smoke coming out every time. It's like a video game. It's crazy.
You know, this is another case of a veteran team not knocking out the youngsters. And the youngsters were on the road. I'm talking specifically about the pitchers, right? Because actually their lineup isn't that young for the Mets, but certainly the DeGrom and Syndergaard, and then we'll see Matt Harvey tomorrow night.
Game one.
Disappointing for Dodger fans that they had Jacob DeGrom on the ropes and they didn't knock him out. And anytime a guy throws 100 miles an hour and you know Syndergaard's right behind him, you got to get him while they're shaky, because they could just rear back and throw, you know, country heat, and you can't catch up to that. So DeGrom gave up, I think, 4 hits in the first couple innings, and they gave up 5 hits total in the game. So you had him on the ropes, and
yep.
you didn't take him out. And so
they had a lot of base runners.
And you were home. Exactly.
Yeah.
And by the way, you made some critical errors that cost you the game. So, and they both happened on Daniel Murphy's hits, right? Daniel Murphy's double ended up being a triple, should have been a double, and he doesn't score in that inning. And then the okey-doke. Didn't you see Johnny Damon in the 2009 World Series? If you're going to do the shift, you got to have somebody covering third. I mean, and again, Daniel Murphy, a guy that is a real savvy and strictly, you know, an offensive baseball player.
So clutch for the Mets. That was
right there, taking that base, and that really took the air out. And then, of course,
not to knock analytics, but sometimes at some point, I think teams are getting too cute with the overshift to the point that you're not ready to cover a base. That to me it's shameful. And
well, you're 100% right. No, you're 100% right, and it's not so much the analytics, but if you're going to do the
analytics, and why they do it, it's totally analytics.
No, but I'm saying if you're going to do the analytics, you got to go all the way. That means you got to retrain your infielders. You got to retrain the pitcher and the catcher, the battery, about what to do. You know, you can't just say, "Oh, I'm going to," because it's not natural. I'm going to put my third baseman in, because I don't want to move the shortstop and the second baseman. I want them to be in their natural position. But I'm going to put the third baseman in short right field. Okay, well, you know what? I've played baseball for 25, 30 years now, and I've never done this. So what exactly happens when, you know, there's a walk, there's a wild pitch, there's a hip? You know, it's like, what exactly happens here?
Yeah,
you have to retrain the mind.
It's too much sometimes. And sometimes you're better off just playing them straight up, because guess what? These guys are also professionals. And so even though they have their tendencies, maybe they'll say, you know what? I'll go opposite field. I won't pull it this time. You know, it's not like these batters are robots. Even if 76% of the time they, you know, pull the ball, they're good enough and talented enough that they can say, wait a minute, you're totally overshifting and playing me. I can go opposite field with this. I don't have to pull it. You know, and I think Pedro was talking about that in terms of the Dodgers batters not sometimes, you know, going for the home run pitch and not, you know, trying to just hit it to put a ball in play or different things. I got to give some props, though, to Turner. Your boy, Justy Turner, he's a beast. He was, you know, had the best batting average of the active players in the, you know, in these final teams.
Oh, he was the only one hitting on a consistent basis for the Dodgers.
He tried to carry the Dodgers. And that guy, man, the way he hustled around the bases, it was great. It was scrappy. Your boy Greinke opted out, threw out a tweet. The Dodgers, you know, Magic Johnson and the boys, you better re-sign and pay Greinke, because if Greinke leaves, it's a wrap. I hope they keep Mattingly. I don't know what could happen there. We'll see what happens. But let's move forward, because we got a lot of football to talk about. Dodgers, goodbye. Mets, Cubs, wow. What are your thoughts about this series? Break it down for me.
You know what? This series is great. These are two teams that were not expected
Harvey
to be there.
Game one.
Yeah. You've got some great young pitchers on the Mets side with some heat. I mean, think about this. You've got Harvey and Lester. And Lester's still in his 20s, right? He's still a young guy. Harvey Lester in game one. And then you've got the potential NL Cy Young and Jake Arrieta against Noah Syndergaard. So, you know, filthy stuff versus filthier stuff. And I'll let you decide who's got filthy and who's got filthier. You know, it's crazy. And then you've got the Mets starting Jacob DeGrom. They announced in Game 3, Cubs haven't determined who's their Game 3 starter, and then they're giving Steven Matz the ball in Game 4, who got hit a little bit.
Right move.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, you keep everybody, and then everybody's available for Game 7, right, if it goes that far. So,
well, it looks the way they have it, though, that Game 7, we'd be back with DeGrom, possibly, and that would be beautiful.
It would be everybody on board, just like they had had this game.
But, Ray, the way that he bulled himself and he thugged himself that game with the Dodgers getting all these hits and base runners, he proved to me when he didn't have his best stuff that he could still hold it down and keep down the fort. That, to me, was so impressive. I already felt like he was my favorite young pitcher. But to me, that just put him over the top for me. That was a great playoff performance.
He did that, and Matt Harvey did that as well in Game 3.
He did. I give Harvey credit.
I got to give credit. And you're right, though. I think in one game, I might go DeGrom first, maybe even Syndergaard second, and Harvey third. But putting that aside, give these young pitchers credit for doing it and allowing the GM, and like Terry Collins said, when we weren't winning, he was talking about the Mets not winning, he said, or not hitting middle of the season before they got Cespedes.
Oh, they were the worst
because we were pitching. It was because we were pitching, and the pitching got us through. So what's going to happen in this series? I think this one goes 7. I really do. And I think in a 7th game, all hands on deck, the Mets have better pitchers. So I think that the Mets are actually going to the World Series. Rizzo, Bryant, Castro.
They're great.
They're really good. They've got Soler. They've got, a whole bunch of hitters. I have a feeling they can be shut down, though. They don't have any playoff experience, and I think they can be shut down. The Mets have a sprinkle of playoff experience, with Curtis Granderson and I guess Cespedes playing in Cuba. I think he's going to wake up. I think they might get a clutch pinch hit from Michael Kadire, who's got a bad knee but is a professional hitter.
I want to see Duda wake up, though, man. He needs to.
Yeah, Duda needs to wake up. And David Wright had an awful series.
Yeah,
and good thing
awful,
that
but...
they won, and good thing that Daniel Murphy took over, because otherwise the New York papers totally gave him a pass. Nobody was talking about how awful the series that the
Well, he has another chance to redeem himself. So are you going Mets in 7?
I'm going Mets in 7. Mets going back to the series.
Back to back. We're going back to back. Well, listen, I got to say it simply like this. I love this Cub team. I love what Joe Madden is doing. And look, the Mets have home field advantage. I think, maybe it gets split up, the first two games just with the pitching matchups. But at the end of the day, I want to see 7, but I think the Mets win in 6. I think what you're saying is true about these Cub bats. I think the Cubs, go home and that first game, they actually wind up going in the series up maybe 2-1, and then the Mets just finish it out. I think what you're going to see is David Wright step up and wind up winning a game or two in terms of leading them to the World Series. And I think the Mets, I love the way Murphy and Granderson are playing. And to me, Cespedes has changed everything. Flores has got to calm down in the field. If he can get a couple of little hits here and there, I think that, DeGrom will settle them down. I think basically at the end of the day, the Mets win in 6, and we have the Mets and Blue Jays in the World Series.
Wow, that would be fun. That would definitely be fun. All right, so we both have the Mets and both have the Blue Jays. Wow.
Can't go wrong with that, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. Listen, let's get to Sunday. We got to talk about Thursday first. I think we both picked the Saints, so we weren't surprised. I think everybody else was picking the Falcons. Look, it wasn't a great game. There was some entertaining. Look, you're going back and forth from baseball to football. 31-21. The Falcons, what it was just Freeman, and more Freeman. Their defense got kind of pounded. Drew Brees, his shoulder was healthy enough. And I think their defense got tired of, getting attacked and ripped apart. Julio's not 100%. Roddy White got a touchdown. Hankerson's not 100%. And I think you saw with Matt Ryan, when he's got some pressure, he needs a clean pocket, let's be honest. But I think the Saints' defense was, you know, Cameron Jordan came to play, and that was enough. And, you know, look, Mark Ingram gets fed the rock, and he runs the ball. I think he's really good, and they need to run the ball more. The Saints can be dangerous. I thought Benjamin Watson was awesome. Just an awesome performance. The old veteran. So good win for the Saints. They needed that. And they'll still be alive. It's a long, long season in the NFL.
Not only is it a long season, but I think that NFC South is totally overrated, that none of those teams are really that good. I think the Carolina Panthers are smoke and mirrors. The Atlanta Falcons, I told you, I don't even think they'll make the playoffs. That's how smoke and mirrors they are. That division and the Tampa Bay Bucs are, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucs. So that was the worst team in football last year. That's why they got Jameis Winston. So that division is to be had, just like the NFC East. Those two divisions are just terrible. And so you're never really out of it, although – if the Saints would have lost this and gone 1-4, they'd probably be out of it. But
if the Saints lose that game, Ray, they're done.
Yeah, but they're right there. I really think that they still have a legitimate chance of winning the division.
The Saints?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, no, they definitely do. So let's get to Sunday.
Although, if the Saints would have lost this and gone 1-4, they'd probably be out of it. But
if the Saints lose that game. Yeah, definitely. They lose that game, they're done.
Yeah, so let's get to the rest of the games. I mean, we got to talk some NFL.
I'm hyped up. We got to start off first with those Redskins against our New York Jets. It's Fitzpatrick against Kirk Cousins. You know, not your Theismann, Namath, or you know, type of matchup here. I guess for me, when I look at this game, I just think the Redskins not having Reed, no DeSean Jackson, I don't think he's going to make it back quite yet. They're kind of banged up. They're going to have to run the ball, but it's hard to run the ball in the Jets. Pierre Garçon, I think the safety, and Darrelle Revis can take him out of the game. I like the Redskins' defense, so I think it's going to be close. Jets are at home at the end of the day. I think the Jets win 20-16 over the Redskins. My fantasy stud, Chris Ivory, 106 and a touchdown.
I can't deny that you speak the truth, man. You know, and I'm a Jet fan. I'm a skeptical Jet fan. But I just think this Washington team is, you know, and again, we saw Kirk Cousins is not the answer. So long term, they need to find another solution. And then especially a banged up Redskins team. And I think Jordan Reed's very important to that team. He might be the unsung hero, right? He opens up down the middle, which allows those wideouts to get free on those deep ends, and also allows for that three-headed monster running attack. So I think that with Richardson back, with the big guys clogging the middle for the Jets, I think the Jets actually win pretty easily. I think they hold Washington to 17, and the Jets are not a great offensive team, but I think they win, call it 24-17.
Wow. Do you think Richardson's going to play a lot of snaps? I haven't read anything. What do you think he's going to do?
I think they'll rotate him in. I mean, I think they've got enough depth, and I think that they've got enough of a plan, long-term plan, that they don't need to rush him back. So, you know, when you're away from the game and not in game shape, you're susceptible to injuries. So I think they'll take care of him. So he'll probably play 20% of the snaps, maybe, defensive snaps.
Who's your fantasy stud?
Fantasy stud Brandon Marshall.
Marsh. Okay.
I think that he just is, especially on a PPR. I mean, I don't know that he'll put up yeoman's like four touchdowns, but I do think he'll get maybe 12, 13 targets. He'll catch 10, let's say 10 balls for 105 and a touchdown.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay, so this is an interesting matchup for me in my house, because my son is a Cardinal fan and I'm a Steeler fan, and we went to the game in Arizona 4 years ago, and this was the Super Bowl, what, 5-6 years ago. So this is fascinating. I got to say, when you look at Arizona and Pittsburgh, look, Big Ben was in practice, but, you know, he's not ready yet. He's trying to get back too soon. Ponce had to have a second procedure, might be out the whole season. That hurts, but at least Wallace is playing well. Hopefully Martavis Bryant, who got a little banged up before last week's game and only was back, can actually play. He's still kind of questionable. This is a hard one because I think I actually have to go with Arizona, and you know I never pick against my Steelers. I don't think Vic has been able to do enough, and the way he's been throwing the ball, I think Arizona's defense is so opportunistic, and they can pick it off in a minute from Rashard Johnson and Matthew. I think they might pick him off once or twice. I think the Steelers' defense is playing much better. Stephon Tuitt and the linebackers, they'll keep it close. But I think the Cardinals actually win a close one. And I hate, you know, I hate to say this, but Le'Veon Bell will be my fantasy stud. Arizona wins 23-20. My fantasy stud is Le'Veon with a touchdown, 5 receptions for 60 yards, and he has about 19 carries for Bucko 3.
Do this. But I'm going to have to disagree with you and say that your Pittsburgh Steelers are going to hold the fort. It's a 1 o'clock game on the East Coast. So you got the Arizona team going cross country. You have this Pittsburgh team with some renewed confidence, arguably should have lost against San Diego, but they pulled it out. Short week for them, but they're ready. Le'Veon Bell is a megastar, and I think that obviously Antonio Brown is as well. And, you know, I want to see Wheaton and Bryant back at full strength, but even without them at full strength, you still got Heath Miller up the middle. And I think Michael Vick is slowly going to start making plays again. You saw that when the game was on the line, Michael Vick remembered that he was Michael Vick.
Yeah.
And the same Michael Vick that missed that throw on was it on third down the week before, that little out to Antonio Brown. They found him, or he found a way to get up the middle, move the chain, get them in field goal range, and ended up winning.
It was a beautiful drive. And they won the game. And also, they should have had 18 more seconds. The NFL, did you see? I've never seen this. The NFL suspended that side judge and the other judge for the Lions-Seahawks game. When was the last time you heard of an NFL referee suspended?
Yeah, I don't know if this is just PR move to appease the franchises and the fans or if it's legit or what. But at least the NFL is doing something. But you know, these guys are human, though. I mean, yeah.
No, I know, but those were huge, Ray. Those were huge blunders. Unacceptable. The guy was looking right at KJ Wright banging the ball out, and the side judge is the one for keeping the clock on the field. How do you not correct it and notice all that time? 18 seconds go up? So anyway, you got my Steelers.
I got your Steelers. I got the Steelers winning. I got them winning a relatively close game. But I think they hold the Cardinals down. I think they win at home 26-20. And my fantasy stud is Antonio Brown. Again, 15 targets. He'll catch 10 of them for
fantasy owners. Love you.
97 yards and 2 touchdowns.
He's been horrible since Vic's been playing, so hopefully Vic.
I know, but he's still getting his targets, though.
Not enough. They need to give him some bubble screens, maybe even a couple of handoffs. They gotta, you know, work the middle with him. So this is a huge game. Bengals at Bills, and Ray, the Bills, everybody's hurt. EJ Manuel starting. Sammy Watkins, who basically pulled the Keyshawn, give me the damn ball, which I think he's right, but he's got to be healthy first, Sammy, before you talk all that smack. But, you know, maybe Buffalo's not the right place for him because it's not a passing team. And he and Roddy White both want to get traded, you know, for all these trade deadlines that are coming up in the NFL. But right now, McCoy's coming back. Carlos Williams not really there. Sammy Watkins and Percy Harvin are banged up. I, at the end of the day, I think the Bengals go to Buffalo, and they put it on the Bills. Now, look, EJ Manuel is in a position where he can sort of shock the world and play huge, which he's capable of. But, you know, Tay's been really rough on EJ Manuel, and he's never come through. I think the Bengals pick him off, and I think it's too much Eifert. It's too much Dalton. It's too much Sanu and Jones, and they double cover AJ Green. The Bengals win 27-21 at Buffalo. And Andy Dalton, 3 touchdown passes, another 300 yards, fantasy stud for Tech.
I think this Buffalo defense can keep it close, but I am not a fan of this offense. Now they have infighting. Get me the ball. People want to be traded. People are banged up. So I actually think this is going to be a dud on offense. So I think Buffalo scores 17 on offense, and Cincinnati pulls away in the second half and ends up scoring 28. And I think my fantasy stud here is AJ Green, baby. 2 touchdowns and 120 yards.
Wow. Carolina at Seattle, another playoff matchup. Look, they cannot win in Seattle, and I don't think Kuechly coming back and off the bye, I don't think that helps. Cameron Newton, for some reason, in Seattle doesn't do his thing. The Seahawks are a little upset from that Cincinnati game. They're back at home. Beast mode, it looks like he's a go. And I think Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson get a little something going. But more importantly, I think the beast mode gets going. I think the Seahawks win a little bit of a thug, you know, back and forth. It's a hit. It's a hard-hitting game. Look, you got nothing but linebacker you in this game with Davis and all the boys from Seattle and Kuechly. I'll say 20-17, Seahawks win, and I'll say beast mode gives me a touchdown and 95 yards.
I think Seattle takes out all of their frustrations on an overrated, undefeated Carolina Panthers. They're 4-0, and they'll be 4-1. I think they lose 30-10. I don't think this Carolina team can do anything on offense against the Seattle defense. I think the Seattle defense will completely lock them down. They have no receivers. Their running game is inconsistent. Cam Newton's been, again, smoke and mirrors. Greg Olsen is really their only legitimate weapon. And I think they just take out all of their frustration. In fact, I'm going to add a 33-10. I'll give them another field goal. I'll say Stephen Hauschka kicks a field goal. Another one. And my fantasy, oh, yeah. My fantasy stud is Russell Wilson. I think he throws for 275. He runs for another 80, and he accounts for 3 touchdowns.
Wow. San Diego Superchargers at the Green Bay Packers. This is a quarterback souffle. I think there'll be a ton of points. But at home, Green Bay's defense has been playing so much better. James Jones is questionable. I think he'll play. Ty Montgomery might get going. I think Devontae Adams is still out. Phillip Rivers does not have Stevie Johnson. Floyd will be a go. And guess what? Gates is back. I'll say at the end of the day, Rodgers is the stud. And Rivers gets busy in a loss. This is going to be fun for fantasy owners. And I'll say the Packers win 40-27.
A ton of points.
A lot of scoring, a lot of fun, but Aaron Rodgers throws for, I'll say, 5 touchdowns, over 300 yards, 40-27. Packers, he's my stud, A-Rodg.
Wow, both teams are frustrated. San Diego frustrated that they lost at home. Green Bay frustrated that Aaron Rodgers had any turnovers at home last week. But I do think Green Bay is the better team. I think they win a close one. I'll say 31-27. I think my fantasy stud is Phillip Rivers in a loss because he has no running game really to speak of. This is a little disappointing. Woodhead is more of a kind of a scat back, better in the passing game. So
you
I think
don't
Rivers
believe in Melly Mel? No Melly Mel?
I have him on 2 of my fantasy teams, and Melvin Gordon maybe next year, but this year he's just mediocre. So I think, but I do think Rivers accounts for all of the San Diego scoring and has a 400-yard game.
And last but not least, Sunday Night Football, another playoff rematch, Deflategate rematch. This is going to be fascinating. Looks like Luck and T.Y. Hilton will be a go, and they're going to need them. Brady and the boys, LeGarrette Blount, Deion Lewis might play a little banged up, but I think, look, the Patriots don't talk during the week, but they talk on Sundays, ladies and gentlemen. And Brady likes to talk with his arm. I think Luck will get his fantasy points. I hope Hilton gets something for all those people that own him like I do, but it's going to be too much of the Gronkinator and a little bit too much of LeGarrette Blount. They still haven't tackled them in 2 years. And I think the Patriots win this game 41-31 in an explosive, entertaining Sunday night football game. And Blunt does his thing, but the Gronk has 2 touchdowns, 8 receptions, 95 yards. Fantasy stud, the Gronkinator.
Is Andrew Luck playing?
Yes, he is.
Then Indianapolis is winning. I'm telling you, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I think that New England is too confident. I think that Bill Belichick is trying to, you know, get under their skin and try to psych them out, but they're a 7.5-point road favorite, and I think they're going to think that they just waltz into Indy and they put it on the Colts. But the Colts have something for them. I think the Colts are waiting. The Colts are going to have an offensive explosion. New England hasn't really played from behind. I think Indy jumps on them. New England plays from behind, has a couple turnovers. And Frank Gore runs the ball from ahead. I like Indy. I like Indy in this game. 31-27.
Who's your fantasy stud?
Fantasy stud is Andrew. I'm trying to be the best quarterback in the game, Luck. I think he throws for 370 and 3 touchdowns.
Don't forget they signed Ahmad Bradshaw. Maybe he could help too.
Going back to Indy.
Yeah, he's a great back. I hope he can play healthy. So, look, college football, and then you're not ready. Real quick, props to Stanford. I'll talk about them later. Big win, 15 in the country over UCLA. Wow, UCLA and USC are just fading fast. This Pac-12 is brutal and dangerous. 56-35. It was 56-20, so they got some junk touchdowns at the end. Going to Saturday, Ray, let's start with these games that are ranked. I cannot stand that Iowa is 17 in the country. They have not played anybody. This week they go to Northwestern, who got thumped by Michigan, number 20. What are your thoughts on this game?
I like Northwestern at home. I think Northwestern lost 31-0. They got a reality check that they're not that good, but they should be good enough to beat Iowa. I really like this Northwestern team. I don't know that they have any studs, you know, pro prospects, but between Thorson and Jackson, I think that they figure out a way to put this game on ice. They're a great defensive team other than last week. So I think they hold Iowa down and they win a close game. I'll call it, I don't know, 21-17.
Yeah, not much to say except for Action Jackson gets busy. I say 28-20. Iowa, to me, is fraudulent. They're not a top 25 team. Northwestern wins, you know, 28-20 pretty easily. So then, Ray, we got some games this week. Real quick, just a game you got to watch out for. I mean, people wouldn't think you would. Watch out for Memphis at home against Ole Miss. I'm just saying. You got to watch out for that. So we do have, though, when you get to these other ranked games, Ray, we do have a nice little treat here with
a trio
Alabama.
Great games. Yeah.
Alabama. Sweet home Alabama, number 10.
Sweet home Alabama, except this game is
number 9, Texas A&M. Break it down for me. What do you got? SEC battle.
Battle. I like this kid, Kyle Allen. I think that Texas A&M and Kevin Sumlin's turned it around on defense, which means that they're a really tough team. But Alabama finds a way. They still haven't forgotten that Johnny Manziel beat them a couple years ago.
Yep.
They find a way. Derrick Henry runs the ball. I think that Coker does enough. His confidence has been up and down. But I think ultimately that Alabama defense holds down the A&M offense just long enough that Alabama takes control in the second half. And with their hogs and Derrick Henry, they run the ball and they take care of business, pull away in the second half. So I like Alabama 27-20 in College Station.
I love this Aggie team. I love Coach Sumlin. I don't want him to go to USC. I like him at Texas A&M and SEC. But I think it's Derrick Henry and Coker not turning it over. And I think Alabama pulls away at the end, 33-27, in a very entertaining game in College Station. Bama wins. We got Michigan State going to the Big House of Michigan. Real quick, Ray, quick question. Can Kansas State shock the world at home and like almost beat TCU? Can they beat Oklahoma and have Swoops losing two in a row, number 19? Yes or no?
No, I don't think so. I think Swoops is frustrated, and okay. They're not going to sneak up on anybody because they almost took down TCU. So I think Bill Snyder's team is good, but not good enough.
Okay, just had to throw it out there. Number 7, Michigan State against number 12, Michigan at the Big House. Ray, what do you got?
Well, Jim Harbaugh has got his team playing real well, and this is in the Big House, and they're running the ball. And, you know, Ruddock is playing, he's got too many interceptions for my liking. But, you know, they are running the ball well, and I think at home they're playing good football. They're a 7-point home favorite.
Yes.
That's crazy to me.
Rudolph hasn't been turning it over. He's been playing better.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Michigan has only allowed 6 points per game this year. So against a pretty decent offense, Sparty, 6 points per game. Something's got to give. I'll tell you what, though. I think that I'm going with Sparty on the road. So all you Woo. Big Blue fans, don't be mad at me. I call it like I see it. So I'll be pulling for Michigan. I love me some Michigan football. But you know what? I think Connor Cook, senior year, goes out with a bang, quietly playing, you know, up there to his potential. I don't think he's a star. People, you know, look at him as a potential star, NFL prospect. But I think in this game, he plays like a star. And he leads Michigan State to a hard-fought victory. I think it's going to be a close game. I'll call it 23-20 Spartans in the Big House.
I think Harbaugh has trained his team in the offseason to win two games all season. And that was Michigan State and Ohio State. And I think they're actually visualizing it, and it has the opportunity to come true. I think I saw some chinks in Michigan State's armor and Connor Cook, that he might not be a legit first-round pick or quarterback, might not be a starter in the league. This team has trouble, and they've almost lost a couple of games in the Big Ten. And I think Michigan has them where they want them in the Big House. And I think mentally, they're ready. 23-20, Michigan. So let's go to Florida, number 8.
Might be the best game of them all.
Without their quarterback, you know Will Grier, still sorry for the kid, the substance, PEDs. You got Harris in there. He started a couple games for them in the past. He's not quite the thrower, maybe a bit of a better runner. We'll see. What do you think? Death Valley, 7 o'clock, Saturday night.
National TV, I believe that Les Miles takes it out on Florida. Now, Florida statistically is the better defensive team, but you know Les Miles' team.
Great defense.
And think about your boy Leonard Fournette. Has 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns already. And we're not even halfway through the season. Now, Florida, we'll keep him in check. I don't think he'll run for 200, but I think he'll do his thing. He'll run for maybe 125 and 2 touchdowns. And you're right. Your boy Harris is a little bit, Brandon Harris, a little bit inconsistent. But I think this home crowd, and I think losing Grier is a big deal.
Yeah,
and I don't think Florida recovers, you know, for the rest of the year. Actually, I think they're going to go on a slide, and they're 6-0 now. They may end up with three losses, and maybe in a bowl game will be a fourth loss. So downhill for Florida. I think LSU takes care of business at home, 30-17.
To me, I feel bad for Florida because they were on the verge of having, you know, probably a special season. The kid was playing on fire, and I think it was finally clicking for him. They're trying to get the suspension to be only to the start of the season, not a full year, actually. And I hope that works out. But, and Death Valley Saturday night, oh, no, 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 no. I say 30-17. Florida has trouble scoring, even though I like some of their wide receivers and skill position guys. Fournette left, Fournette right, Fournette all night. Bucks 70, two touchdowns. Now, Ray, that's really it for the ranked games, but I got to throw this at you because of all the beef and all the drama from USC. They are at their biggest rival in some way at number 14, Notre Dame. Can USC shock the world and pull off this upset and galvanize themselves around their coach, Helton, and win one for the old Trojan?
I think they can, but I don't think that they will. I don't think they're ready. I think this Notre Dame team is really good. They have talent on offense, talent on defense. It's ironic enough that they're talking about Chip Kelly and Brian Kelly going to USC potentially.
It's talking about everybody. Everybody is rumored for this job.
Can we go? Can we go?
I mean, John Harbaugh, yeah.
Can we go also to USC, man? Why not? They're throwing out big money. Let's go out there. But no, for real, I think Notre Dame, coming off of some shaky performances last couple, or some, I shouldn't say shaky, but certainly tight performances, I think they open up a can on USC.
Too much precise. Now, can Penn State upset Ohio State? Can Hackenberg shock everybody and throw himself back in the top five or first round pick as a quarterback if he can upset Ohio State at home? Is that possible?
I think he can play well. I think he can play well and maybe get himself some more first-round love, second-round love as a profile.
I don't love the kid, but he does have the arm, so let's see what he does against this Ohio State team, who I think is ready for action. That should be fun to watch. But last but not least, this one is good. ASU at number four, Utah. Now, the Utes are really tough, but they're not explosive. This one, I actually think I smell an upset. Tay's going to go with ASU, and I think it's like they pulled the upset a couple weeks ago. I think they do the upset in Utah, and I think ASU actually shocks everybody and messes up this Pac-12 and puts Stanford back up top again and wins 31-30 over Utah and your boy Booker.
No, you're out of your mind. Utah takes care of business. Arizona State had their one huge win upset, but no, Utah is the class of that Pac-12. These guys are phenomenal. I think they win easily.
All right, real quick, we wrap up the show with our segment, You're Not Ready. Ray, tell me who I'm not ready for.
You're not ready, Tay, for my man, Devontae. That's with a silent Y. Devontae Freeman, my man. You're not ready for him to win the NFL MVP. I mean, this cat is taking the league by storm. You thought it was Julio Jones on that team, but it's really Devontae. I mean, this cat, second-year kid out of Florida State, has 9 rushing touchdowns, 10 total touchdowns. He is your NFL stud in real life. He's your fantasy stud in fantasy life. And this guy is taking an Atlanta team that has no business being 5-1 and just doing things. And he is about as complete a back as there is these days in the NFL. I mean, he's Le'Veon Bell Jr. right now. So right now, leading candidate for NFL MVP, you got to think, if you're not going to vote for a quarterback, you got to vote for Devontae Freeman.
I am not mad at you, Ray. Real quick, you are not ready for our friends of the show, Coach David Shaw and the 5-1 Stanford Cardinal. Wow, they are putting on a show. I think not just beating UCLA, but they will now go on to win the Pac-12 and will actually be one of the teams to make it in the Final Four. Over 1,200 yards for Hogan. He's turned it around after that first loss in the beginning of the season, Northwestern. Ed McCafferty's son, Christian McCafferty, is a beast rushing the ball. He's got 844 yards receiving the ball. He's second in receptions for them, third in yards with 1st in reception, 16 receptions and 172 passing yards. Ray, he's a one-man show. You got Barry Sanders Jr. You got a solid defense. You have got a team, the Stanford Cardinal, and Coach David Shaw are ready to wind up being number four team in the nation when it's all said and done and make the playoff and represent the Pac-12 as the Pac-12 champs.
Friends of the show. We might have to work on getting him back on the show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that would be great. You know, we always
pull
for our guests.
Yeah, if they pull that off. Stanford Cardinal, baby. I gotta give them their props. What a turnaround, right?
Absolutely. So, hey, have a great sports week. This is one of the better weeks in college football where you got three top 10 matchups. This is going to be awesome. So the NFL actually this week is not great, but college is fantastic. And baseball, we got the two LCSs kicking off. We got a lot to talk about. Come back and join us on Monday, but have a great sports weekend.
Yes, have a great sports weekend. Let's go Jets, Giants, Steelers, Mets, Blue Jays. Enjoy the game. Royals, Blue Jays tonight. Thanks for listening, and